ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Here at Life Matters, we have been very interested in protein lately, for good reason. We all need it for healthy muscles and overall well-being. But I bet there have been lots of parents listening thinking, what about my kids? Their lunchbox is entirely white. Bread, pasta, rice. Are they getting enough protein for an active life and to set them up for later life too? Pediatric dietitian Karina Savage can help clarify some of these concerns, I reckon. Karina, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, we've been hearing lately just how important protein is for building healthy muscles and bones all throughout life. How important is it then for kids who are still developing their skeletal systems?
So children do need protein. So if we think about protein as building blocks for all of our bodies, but especially important for children who are growing and developing, it's important for their bones, their muscles, their skin, their blood. So children need to get good quality protein so that they are growing and developing to their full potential.
So I mean, we've had lots of adults texting in over the recent weeks that we've been covering protein stories saying, am I getting enough? What should I be eating? Are parents worried about their kids getting enough protein, you know, according to the people who've been coming to you?
Yeah, look, they do. They do worry that their child is not getting enough protein. But when you look at, when I look at, you know, what their child is eating, and then when you look at what our national nutrition surveys tell us, it all tells us very similar things in terms of the majority of our children well exceed their protein needs on a daily basis, but it's the types of the protein foods that is more of the issue. And that's certainly what I see with my parents who have fussy eaters. They worry about protein, but it's not so much the grams of protein because they're well exceeding that. It's actually the quality of the protein that is the concern.
Really? So what's going wrong? They're getting too much of what kind of protein?
Well, young children especially love white foods, so they love dairy foods, and dairy foods are a very rich source of protein, but they don't necessarily contribute nutrients such as iron, which we do see as an issue in our young children. It's approximately 20% of our young children don't meet their iron requirements. So it's a function of adequate protein, but not the right variety of protein. So it's the protein such as meat, chicken, fish, eggs, nuts, seeds. It's those types of proteins that parents are struggling with. And I've certainly had my own struggles with my children with those foods. The lunch boxes are often lacking in those proteins and you can't send nuts to school. So it's the white diet that's contributing to this issue. Children love the carbs and the milk, which gives adequate protein, but not necessarily all the nutrients that our children need.
Yeah, I imagine that, you know, white rice and white bread and things and pasta and not that high in fibre either. Is that a big issue?
Correct. So this white diet or the high dairy, high carb diet doesn't meet our children's fiber requirements. And fiber is so important for our children's gut health. Fiber feeds our children's gut microbes and keeps their gut microbes in healthy balance. So we really need to be feeding the good bugs in our gut because that in turn keeps our immune system healthy. About 3/4 of our immune system is in our gastrointestinal tract. And so if we're feeding the good bugs and keeping our good bugs happy, it keeps our immune system happy and healthy. And it really helps to reduce our risk of getting sick. And so a lack of fiber can also increase our children getting sick. And who wants to take days off to take their kids to the doctors?
Well, yeah, exactly. Now, you don't want them getting sick, full stop, but also
correct.
Yeah, throws the day out. Now, Karina, I was saddened, but also a bit reassured, I have to say, to hear that even a paediatric dietitian can find it hard to get their child to eat a balanced diet. Tell us a bit about what happened with your daughter.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't escape any of us. Well, I think it's about 30 to 50% of young children are classified as fussy eaters. And certainly I had my own experience when my daughter was little. She, you know, fell into that typical fussy eater
profile. She's very strong-willed, bless her. She's a gorgeous girl, and she's, I'm pleased to say, now out the other end. But yeah, I certainly had my struggles, and it really challenged my confidence. You know, I'd already been a pediatric dietitian for 10 years prior to having her, and nothing that I'd really learnt in uni was sort of working for me, and I really had to create my own plan and my own method, which I now teach to a lot of other parents. But it's something that I think really sneaks up on you, and you feel like you lose all power when you've got this 3-year-old sitting at the table absolutely refusing all the healthy things, and you feel completely stuck as to what to do. But rest assured, people listening out there, that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And yeah, she was low in iron, and I had to really, I think, take a step back and just changed the way that I approach things, because as a parent now, I speak very differently to parents than before I was a parent. And it's something that you can definitely work your way through, but I think having some clear support is really beneficial, because there's so much information out there. It's so confusing. I mean, you can Google everything, right?
Exactly.
It's just very confusing for parents, I think.
Well, and I mean, at the risk of asking you to kind of squish your years of knowledge down into a little potted history, I guess a lot of parents are going to be thinking, how do I make those first steps? They're just having a meltdown, and should I just give them the toast so that they've got some food in their tummy and they'll go to sleep? Should I give them the rice? How can you gradually expand their horizons a little bit when it comes to bland foods?
Well, to start off with, the key factor is actually understanding why they are fussy. And I've got a 3-week fussy eater program where week one is all about getting to the bottom of why your child is fussy, because it's a bit like, you know, your car that's broken down. If you don't understand why your child is fussy, your car is broken down, you can't then put the right fix in place and actually get it up and back on the road. Same with a child. If you don't understand why your child is fussy, it's really hard to create the right strategy to fix it. So for example, if we work out that a child is fussy because they are quite sensory, so they're super tasters, or they don't like the way foods are mixed on their plate, or they don't like certain textures of food. But then as a mum, you've seen this, you know, cool hack on Instagram that he's got, you know, you're cutting food into cool little shapes and, you know, making food really fun. That's the wrong fix for your child's underlying cause of their fussy eating. So we need to, first of all, understand why they're fussy, and then create the right fix for that underlying cause. And I think that's where sometimes we go astray, is we've sort of got these top three things: just keep throwing veggies on their plate, you know, don't make a fuss. But it doesn't always work for parents, because it's not necessarily addressing that root underlying cause of their child's fussy eating. So I think that's really the first point. But definitely trying to eat together, have really positive. It was actually lovely listening to your interview before, because I'm all about encouraging parents to eat together, role model healthy eating behaviors, and children seeing their parents enjoying food plants so many positive seeds that will eventually grow over time. It's just wonderful to hear that story before. I was like, that's exactly what I say, but it was coming from a completely different angle. But there's lots that we can do, but I think it's trying to understand, I guess, what's causing it in the first place, like what's driving it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you do have a kid who, for whatever reason, is saying, I would just like to eat things in the beige colour palette, are some easy swaps, Karina, when we think about their diet across a day or across a week, that you can nudge it, as you said, you know, protein's not the issue, nudge it towards more fibre-rich and nutrient-dense options?
Yeah, so I always encourage parents to, with that white diet, with those sort of safe foods that child has, always try to add little colour extras on the side, because that repeated exposure builds familiarity and trust, just like eating with your parents. Seeing your parents eat builds familiarity and trust, and that's really what we want to do with our fussy eaters. We want to add those little extras in all the time just to build familiarity and trust. But certainly adding in yummy foods, again, these could be baked goods, a bit like you were talking before, but that have extra added nutrients. So we add in things like flaxseed, we add in things like chia seeds, because these foods are high in fiber, but they're added into tasty sort of kids' snacks that can really bring valuable fiber. So I like to tell parents to make the most of snacks because children can basically get 50% of their nutrition, young children, from snacks. So snacks need to be really valued and not just throwing some cheese and crackers at them, because snack time can really contribute significantly to your child's day. So if they're not eating veggies at the dinner table, doesn't matter. If you can get veggies in twice to other parts of the day, it really takes the pressure off dinner time. So I do encourage parents to focus on making snacks count. Think about it as a nutritionally balanced week rather than a nutritionally balanced day, because again, then it sort of takes the pressure off, because we're not robots and they're not robots and we don't eat the same thing every day. So trying to make snacks count, sneaking extra things into our like baked goods and whatnot. And I don't mind hiding vegetables and, you know, whatnot, but I also think it's really valuable that our children see the food as well. So that's where you just want to pop a little bit of those, you know, healthy foods next to their white foods, just to try to stretch them over time.
Yep. And enjoy those foods yourself.
That's
Karina,
right.
It's been fascinating talking to you, and thank you for sharing your struggles as well as your professional insights with us on Life Matters.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Pediatric dietitian Karina Savage. So that's how it works with kids. But for babies, there can be some quite specific challenges around protein. Dr. Miaobing Zheng is a researcher and dietitian at the Institute of Physical Activity and Nutrition at Deakin University. Miaobing, welcome to Life Matters.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, I'm fascinated. You were looking into obesity in kids and you found an unusual trend when it came to protein and babies. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, that's right. Like, we often think that high protein diet is beneficial for weight loss and it promotes satiety. However, when it comes to babies, that's not the case. So we did two studies and both found that for babies consuming a high protein diet, they put on weight faster in infancy and they had higher obesity risk in childhood. And the link is largely driven by animal source protein, but not plant source protein.
Okay, so when we say animal source protein, do we mean milk feeding times or when they're on solids?
Yeah, so we're talking about the protein from meat and dairy sources. So largely I'm talking about during the first or 2 years of life.
Okay. And so when you said, you know, there's a link between how much weight the children put on early in life, a lot of people think, but that's great when babies are chubby and, you know, toddlers have those little fat rolls.
Yeah.
It's really healthy for them. Mm. What kind of excess weight putting on were you thinking of?
Yeah. So what we're trying to say is putting on weight too fast means they grew much faster than what they should be. So in technical terms, we refer that as rapid weight gain in infants, which means upward crossing one or more centile lines in their weight growth charts. Like, for example, moving from a 50th percentile to a 75th percentile in the growth charts.
Yeah, so that would be something that your GP or your maternal child health nurse would be able to spot for you.
That's so, right.
Miaobing, I guess there'll be people listening who are going to be worried now that they're feeding their child too much protein. What are the guidelines and what would that look like in a healthy child's diet?
Yeah, so we recommend breastfeeding if you can. If you cannot breastfeed, trying to choose infant formula with a lower protein content, because our finding actually found the excess proteins largely coming from infant formula. Many of you might not aware, infant formula actually have a higher protein content than human breast milk. And from birth to 6 months, babies should have a milk-based diet of either breast milk or infant formula. But around age 6 months, babies should start having some solid foods that are iron-rich.
Okay, because a lot of people these days are seeing ads for things like toddler milk and going, okay, well, perhaps we should be feeding milk beyond 6 months. What's your view on that?
So if you cannot breastfeed, we suggest you continue to have infant formula or toddler formula. But apart from that, the babies should consume more foods during that stage. Like I mentioned earlier, iron-rich first foods such as iron-enriched infant cereal, pureed meat, poultry, and fish to meet their iron requirements. And we also suggest parents to introduce some plant sources as well, like such as tofu, cooked beans, peas and lentils, or nut butter if there's no allergy.
Yes, we were hearing from Karina Savage before how it's a problem that people aren't getting enough iron, but also fibre in their childhood, and that is a massive issue. So if we about that context that most kids are getting enough protein and quite a few are getting too much protein, what would the right amount of protein look like on a plate, for example, if we're thinking about how much to plonk down in front of our kids, Miao Bing?
Yeah, so in Australia, we have infant feeding guidelines. So for example, for age 7 to 12 months, so babies should still encourage to consume breast milk or infant formula around 600 ml to meet their calcium requirement. And then we also recommend parents to feed them a couple of spoons from various food groups like fruit and vegetables and grain foods and infant cereal, also the pureed meats, poultry, fish and tofu and eggs.
Yep, that's a really useful way to think about it in terms of those kind of clumps of food rather than grams, I think, for a lot of parents. Miao Bing, that's fascinating to hear that, we have some assumptions about the amount of protein in our babies' diets that are clearly wrong on a population-wide level. Thank you for sharing your research with us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Miao Bing Zheng is a researcher and dietitian at the Institute of Physical Activity and Nutrition at Deakin University. And some kids just getting too much protein through toddler milk and formula beyond 6 months. Interesting. Well, you heard earlier too from Karina Savage, who's a pediatric dietitian, walking us through some of the best ways to get protein and therefore more iron and fibre into our children's diets.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.